This is a Defocus Media production.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, Canada's number one optometry podcast. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here. I am in Quebec City for the 38th Congress of Canadian Optometry Association. It has been an amazing meeting. Quebec City is absolutely beautiful. If you haven't been here, you need to come and check it out. It is truly a gem. Like, feels like you're in an old European city here. You don't feel like you're in Canada at all. Absolutely lovely. And I get to be here with my amazing friend, Dr. Claudine Curry. Again, you know, I want to say right off the top, thank you to Thea Pharma Canada for supporting Claudine and I doing this three-part series of conversations. And this is the second part. Now, if you missed the first part, make sure you go check that out. You don't have to go and watch it now because they're not like in sequential order here. But make sure you do check that out. In the first part, we talked about Claudine and her journey as an optometrist and starting her business, Eyedrop Shop, and all the other wonderful things that she's doing. And today we're going to have our discussion about clean beauty, what that is and why it's important. And the third and final installment is going to be specifically about dry eye, all things dry eye, nitty gritty detailed stuff. Because Claudine, of course, is a dry eye expert. She is an entrepreneur and she is a world famous TikToker. If you don't follow her, please do. Is it Eyedrop Shop?
Yeah,
on it's TikTok. But now she's also an author. Claudine has written this children's book, and I've basically like gone through the whole episode without letting you say a single word. So we're going to talk about the book first. But Claudine, why don't you say a couple of words so people know that you can speak.
Hi. No, I'm so happy to be here for the second one. The first one was honestly so much fun, right?
Yeah.
We had a blast.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm excited to be here again and be able to chat about all kinds of fun stuff and clean beauty, which is honestly a passion of mine.
Yeah.
And over the past couple of years, I've really dived into and gotten to know a little bit more. So I'm excited to talk about this specific topic today.
Yeah. And it's something that I actually know very little about. I may be a little ashamed to say that.
No.
As an optometrist, I probably should know a little bit more about it. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity to learn more, but also to share the information with our colleagues who may be wanting to learn more about it. But first, Emma goes to the eye doctor. Tell me about this. Yourself and your almost twin sister, Gabriella, have written this book. Tell us about what is Emma Goes to the Eye Doctor, what inspired you to write it, and who's it for?
Yeah, no, we're so excited. So my sister and I wrote this book together basically because we wanted to make sure that we prepped kids or gave kids the tools to be prepped for an eye exam, because we noticed that when they came in, sometimes they might be a little apprehensive or nervous, and it's mainly because they just weren't aware of the steps that were going to go on.
Right.
So there were some books that had to do with kind of getting glasses and eyeglasses and all that stuff, but there were none that went through the actual tests that an eye doctor does. So there's, you know, stereo in there and there's color vision and they're taking, you know, the vision in each eye.
Right.
So that kids can really get used to what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course I did it with my sister. And so that was the most fun to be able to collaborate on something together like that.
Yeah, very cool. The images are nice.
Yeah.
It's a very child-friendly book.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. It's definitely
Thank
something
you.
That's going to be valuable. So where do people get it?
And it's on Amazon.
Oh,
yeah, okay. So it's on Amazon.ca, Amazon.com. It's going to be translated into French and Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. So French for Quebec, which is fitting because we're here.
Yep.
And also Spanish for the U.S. on the U.S. site. But yeah, we're really excited. And ultimately, we hope it helps a lot of kids. And so that's why it was a fun project to do with her.
There's a text that I sent you just the other day. And the question was, is there anything you don't do?
Yeah, thank you for that.
No, honestly, you're amazing. You're inspiration.
Thank you.
We all, at least I think, we all enjoy watching you grow and do everything you do.
Let's
talk about clean beauty. So where does the term clean beauty come from? Like, what's not clean beauty? And why do we need to know the term clean beauty?
So clean beauty, it doesn't really only apply to the eye care space. It's really kind of the beauty industry in a whole. And it came about so that people would, or companies would be kind of more inclined to do products that had more, let's say, safe ingredients, non-toxic, take away some of the bad stuff that's out there. But it's also kind of an all-encompassing word, right? Clean beauty, natural beauty. So this is also part of, you know, an effort for the beauty industry to go towards something that would be safer for people to put on their bodies.
I gotcha. Okay, so it's an overall thing that the beauty industry is kind of moving towards, or at least more conscious of now. So what are some of those ingredients you talked about? Like, there's certain toxins or ingredients that we maybe need to avoid, or there's certain things that, let's say I pick up a bottle of something, will I be able to read something and say, oh, that's bad? Or how does that work?
I think that's the hardest part of it. At the end of the day, once I dive more and more into this field, it's kind of like I realize that I'm not a cosmetic chemist, right? No, but that's the truth. I decided not to. But you know what I mean? Because the more I try and read it and the more I get into it, I realize this is a whole other field. I mean, people go to school to become specialized in this and know what's going on.
Right.
So my whole goal is to take optometry and give them the tools to be able to propose things to their patients that their patients can use and be comfortable with, but also do it in a reasonable way, because we can't necessarily read all the ingredients on every bottle and know exactly what's going on and be able to understand. Maybe a few we could pick out. Like, I could give you an example. I try and counsel my patients to use things that are fragrance-free, because fragrances, it could be either a synthetic component that makes it smell good or something kind of like an essential oil. But ultimately, it's just purely for smell. A lot of people are very sensitive to it. Mm. So realistically, if we could take it out, I find that's a positive.
Okay.
So these are kind of main ones that I'm like, you know what, it's not in there for a real purpose that's going to serve your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we could remove it and make sure that you're not going to be sensitive to that, then that's something good. But fragrances is also something that's touchy in the sense that it's kind of a blanket statement.
Mm.
And so because of these trade secrets and all kinds of stuff, like a company can say fragrances and they don't have to say what's in it. So there's a whole world behind this cosmetic thing, and I'm diving more and more deeper and deeper into it.
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole, I guess, or like a Pandora's box, right? It's the fragrance thing. I feel like you'll see some products will just say right on the front, fragrance free. So
yeah,
that kind of makes it a little easier.
Right.
But you know, we were talking about this a little bit. It's like companies are tricky with how they word things, because
mm-hmm.
it like all ends up being like marketing, and it makes it even more difficult for the consumer, even for us as the doctors, to know what's what. Like, you know, I think were we talking about chickens and being like cage free?
Yeah.
Free run, right? Like, you were giving me that.
That's how I felt at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like when we go to the grocery store and like all you want to do is pick the best eggs,
right?
Okay? But then you're looking and there's like, you know, free run eggs and omega eggs and organic eggs and free range eggs. And then you realize the free range is like that the chicken was only out to run 10 minutes outside. Like,
yeah.
You're just like, can you just give me the best eggs?
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's kind of where I boil it down. I'm like, can you just recommend something that like we know is the best and that's going to be like easy to recommend for our patients, and you just simplify this for us, you
right.
know, that's the idea.
But so that's now becoming part of our job, is to try to simplify it for our patients.
Yeah.
So they know. And this goes, but the companies, it seems like, are deliberately going the other way. Like, they're almost deliberately complicating it so we can't tell the difference. I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel that. Let's say if we step away from beauty just for a second, but think about like supplements.
Yeah.
Right. Omega 3 is probably maybe one of the more relevant things for us. You know, if I say, you know, we recommend omega 3 all the time, and patients say, oh, I'm already taking omega 3s.
Right.
Well, where did you buy it? What kind is it? Is it, you know, is it triglyceride? Is, you know, what's the EPA, DHA? What are all these things? But the what you see on the shelf is like, you know, high concentration. One a day. And it's like patients are like, oh, that seems good.
Right.
And it's like false marketing almost. And this is like, I think, crazy in the beauty industry as well.
And I think that like hammers the point home so much about how it has to come from the doctor.
Yeah.
So much of the omega-3, I mean, it's just that this is what I'm saying in my practice. This is the brand, or these are the brands that I recommend because this reason. Same thing goes for sort of clean beauty. At least you could point your patients in a direction, because if we're overwhelmed and we're sitting there trying to figure it all out, imagine how they feel trying to do something that's not going to exacerbate their dry eye, that's not going to make them feel worse in the middle of like our IPL treatment, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to do so much good, but cosmetics around and on the eye can make things kind of go back a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why it's super important for us to be able to recommend the proper things to our patients.
Right. So this is the next part of the conversation, is the part that I'm going to be listening to the most. And I think others out there are going to, this is going to be relevant for many of us, many of our colleagues. And that is, so we know that cosmetics around the eyes and eyeliner and mascara and all this stuff is bad for the eyes. And we see our patients come in and we're looking under the slit lamp and we see all the gunk there. how do I have that conversation? Because I don't actually know much about makeup and, you know, and how to make a recommendation to a person coming from a perspective of not knowing anything. Like, how do I have that conversation? What types of things should I be saying that are going to be relevant and making the right recommendations, talking about clean beauty, all of this? How do I even start that conversation?
And by the way, I think that's very common and valid, and probably a ton of people watching feel the identical way that you feel.
Okay, good.
So this is how I think, and it's just kind of the way I've approached it, and tell me if this is kind of a good, helpful way to start. But for me, the eye doctor's job is to point out the problem. If the eye doctor is interested in it, they could take it as far as they want. If not, the goal is to train a staff to be sort of a dry eye champion, an ocular hygienist at the dry eye summit, you know, like to really make someone who's interested, because no matter what the field is in your practice, right? If the person who's conveying the message is passionate about it, you're sure that the person receiving the information is going to love it more and it's going to just go well. So to me, let's say you see a patient who has lash extensions and they look down and that's it. Between the eyelid bargain and the lash extension, you just see it's like full of Demodex and whatever else lodged itself there.
Right.
To me, the job is to say, I noticed that inside your lash extensions, there is a lot of debris. I'm gonna, you know, mark this down, and there's solutions so that you can wear your lash extension safely, and Alice will be able to, you know, follow up on this, and then Alice follows up on it. But as an OD, they're not looking at their eyelashes in like, you know, high res, in high mag. So we have to tell them. It's our role. It's like seeing SBK and saying nothing, right? And then we need solutions, but it doesn't necessarily mean if this isn't what you love to do that you have to sit there and start learning about mascara, you know? You could,
fair.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so we don't have in my office, we don't have that dry eye champion or ocular hygienist or hygienist yet, right? So I do need to, and my business partner is good about it. She knows how to have these conversations and she has them. But I need to get a bit better. So let's say I have that patient who has the eyelash extensions.
Yeah, let's do it.
And the gunk, okay? I know that. I see it. And I say, ooh, those eyelash extensions.
Yeah.
What do I say about that to the patient? And then what maybe do I recommend as, like, how do you clean it? And how do I make sure I don't wreck the eyelash extensions?
Yeah, okay, perfect. Here's, like, the three things you need to know about lash extensions. Okay. So you need to recommend something to clean that doesn't have oil. Okay? Because lash extensions go on the lash with glue, and if you put oil on it, it's going to melt off the glue. So they just spent like $200 getting lashes, and you're like, hey, use this oil-based cleanser, and then all their lashes come off, they won't be happy. Gotcha. So it just has to have no oil. So, you know, there's a bunch of examples out there that are made for lash extensions. There's even tools that you can get that literally, it kind of looks like a little brush fork, and it'll go and mechanically remove it. And the third thing is you could always go for like HOCL. It's your trusty spray to make sure
just
it stays clean.
And
so that's like the main things to know about lash extension and taking care of them.
Lefagel
has no oil. Yeah.
And then hydrochloris.
Like a hypochlorous. Yeah. There's one specifically. It's okay.
Don't burn your eyes, guys.
Yeah. And so
hydrochloric acid.
Yeah, just a little bit of that. You'll kill anything that's on the eye. And the eye.
But yes, and the eyeball.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then, so the spray, is that more like a maintenance thing after it's been cleaned?
Yeah. So the lash extension should be cleaned every single day.
Okay.
And they're conditioned to this as well. You know, a good lash tech will prep the person and say, you have to clean your lashes, you have to brush through them. But it's more the products, you know, there's a We Love Eyes pink bottle of foam that says like four lash extensions. It's created for that. I recommend it a lot. And so that will go and literally clean the lashes morning and night and you're done.
Okay.
So that's a lash extension.
So now I got that patient in front of me
yes.
with the lash extensions. I can comfortably say to that person, I see you have lash extensions.
Uh-huh.
Here's how we can make sure they stay clean and you avoid potential complications. One, use this product oil-free to clean your lashes.
Uh-huh.
Two, there's pitchfork-shaped things.
Yes! Perfect.
Brushes that you can put in there to clean them. And then three, if you spray this hypochlorous acid?
Yeah.
Acid?
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? on your eyelids, that'll help to kind of keep the bacteria and things off of it to prevent buildup.
That's it.
Cool. See?
And that way, you know, also, like, if we rewind a bit, I still have the discussion. So my 10-second discussion is like, if you were to ask me, is putting lash extensions the best thing on the planet? And like, is glue good to put on your eyelashes? Like, my answer as an optometrist has to be no.
Right.
But if you're going to do it, let's do it the safest way possible. And then whatever. I think the key is not to be like, oh, you're wearing lash extensions, like take them off, because yeah, they're going to do it. They're doing it regardless. So might as well do it under the supervision of an optometrist who could follow them up and make sure. And worst case scenario, you know, like we're there if there's complications.
Kind of like the parents who say, if you're going to drink, just drink with me.
You want to be the cool house.
Don't go drink with your buddies.
Exactly. Right?
If you want to wear eyelash extensions, come
do it with us.
Do it under our
This is a safe space, a safe lash extension space.
So, eyelash extensions is a really common one. I think that's, thank you for explaining that, because now I will actually comfortably be able to have that conversation with my patients about, all right, if you're going to wear eyelash extensions, let's make sure they're clean. But if somebody's going to ask me yes or no, should I get them, I will just...
It's going to, you know, you have more risk if you put lash extensions. You have more risks if you do certain things.
Yeah.
But then everybody gets to just decide in their own life what risk tolerance they have.
Yeah.
And then we're there to accompany them along the journey.
Without judgment.
Without judgment.
Little judgment. So the next thing is like actual makeup being applied to the eyes, right? So what do you say to somebody who's got like eyeliner on their eyelid?
Waterline?
Yeah, on the waterline.
So you must have this picture. We all kind of have that photo stuck to our wall with the eyelid margin and then the meibomian glands or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I literally will show them, like, these little spaces are where the oil comes out. And so when you're coloring on them, you're blocking the opening to oil coming out. Mm-hmm. So even if I give you the best omega-3 on the planet, it has no chance of leaving because that's where we're blocking. So I think it's education at that point to really kind of explain what they're doing. And a lot of them are like, oh, okay, I get it. And then they could do it a little bit under.
Okay.
And just explaining sort of what they're doing.
I like you have the images where it's like, here's what a clean eyelid looks like, and the oil coming out is clear. And then there's the one that the guck in the eyelid is like inflamed. And
it's like 0 to 100. Yeah. They don't have any moderate person.
There was a commercial like, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
It's
like, this is your eyelid.
But how funny would that be as a poster? Yeah. Like in your office, like, this is your eyelid. This is your eyelid.
This is your eyelid on drugs.
We'll find something.
Yeah.
It's not a fully formulated idea.
It's not a good idea.
Maybe we drop it.
It was a good thought, but then it wasn't. Okay, so the other thing is mascara. So let's say, that was an obvious one. Don't put eyeliner on your waterline. Don't block those glands.
But in the sense that I just educate in that case. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let's say if that's sitting in my chair, I'll be like, okay, ideally come to the appointment without makeup. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's such a seemingly obvious thing.
It's not. Actually, we added it to our recall, like when we call to confirm. Uh-huh.
But then you can't see what their makeup habits are.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe so either or. I guess I do that in my dry eye practice when they're like coming for a treatment.
Sure. Well,
and I'm just like, ah.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, right. That makes sense. So what about making recommendations now about the makeup itself? So let's say you see that they wear eye makeup, their eyeliner or mascara or something like that.
Yeah.
Would it be appropriate for me to say, I see you wear mascara. Can I make a recommendation as far as a product that would be more safe for your eyes?
You could. I find the reason this whole thing kind of fell into my lap is because the patients usually ask, you know, but, you know, they were the ones coming with, I cannot, the chief complaint was, I cannot tolerate mascara anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, my eyes are red. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So they're prompting the question as opposed to like every single patient, like switching their mascara, I think is like, you know, a hard battle to do. But just to start with the people who come to you and say, you know, they'll say it. They'll be like, you know, I'm just really sad that I had to stop wearing makeup because I reacted to everything.
Right.
Or like, I have my daughter's wedding. I really wish I could wear something that'll stay on and that I could do and just look like myself, you know? Because we think of cosmetics as this fluffy thing, which is fine. You know, we are dealing with more intense problems in our clinic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it really does have a very like strong correlation with self-esteem and people's mental health and how they feel. So it isn't so fluff after all, right? If you could get someone to feeling better mentally, that's huge.
Yeah, no, that's a big part. And I think in dry eye, that's a big thing in general, right?
Yeah.
So dry eye has a big psychological impact on a lot of people, but that's another aspect of it. So if that patient comes in, I can say, well, your eyelids are just inflamed, you have blepharitis, all these things. We got to treat that.
Yeah.
But I do get that patients come in fairly regularly, I would say, and they say, I can't wear makeup anymore.
Yeah.
And I haven't been, like, full, you know, disclosure here, I haven't been making any recommendations for products that I could be, you know, that could be better or more comfortable for them.
Yeah.
So maybe we can offer something. Like, are there certain brands or products out there that you would suggest or recommend?
Sure.
That people could look at? And should we carry, two questions.
Yeah.
Recommend some brands and products. And two, should we carry them in our office? Or, you know, should we just suggest, like, there are products out there, you know, go to Eye Drop Shop and you can find them? Or, like, what's the right way to approach that?
I think it's important for eye doctors to carry it themselves to be able to offer it, because it really does show that you're kind of always on the cutting edge. You're always getting the new stuff. You're addressing their main concerns. It's also fun to have in a waiting room, right? It's nice to see, like, the glaucoma and the retinal detachments on the screen in your waiting room. But it's also fun to look at kind of, you know, makeup options and things like that. It's a different demographic that you'd hit.
Yeah.
And it's important for a clinic in general. So I think the clinic should retain those sales and they should be able to retail it in their practice. And then as far as the initial question, so going back to the whole clean beauty thing at the beginning. So this is kind of this huge monster that initially, I'll just talk about my personal experience, I was trying to tackle. And then once you get into it, you notice that there's all these words and everything like that that's kind of placed there that's hard to understand because everything's under. Like, for example, if you use fragrance again, you're like, ah, what's in there, blah, blah, blah. So what I did was I searched, and this is full disclosure, Eye Drop Shop brings in 3 clean beauty brands from the US, you know, so this is what I did initially just for my patients, is I said, okay, if I can't, like, figure out every single brand on the planet, let me contact the people who made these specific product lines. Mm-hmm. Let me ask them sort of what was their motivation? What did they do? Like, how did they make sure it was eye safe? What ingredients are out? What ingredients are in? Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I was able to really have, like, a personal contact with the formulator. And so those products are the ones that I recommend, because I know that they were made either by an optometrist or ophthalmologist in conjunction with, you know, a cosmetic chemist. So they were able to kind of, like, go through all those steps and create something that would be, you know, the safest possible for eyes.
Yeah, that's really good that you've done all that research, and that it's nice to know that you are carrying things that are, you've done the research and are relevant and important, and not just because it's out there and, like, oh, we'll just sell every product that's out there. It's like only the ones that you've deliberately selected, intentionally selected. The thing about, you mentioned about, like, you know, created by an optometrist or ophthalmologist. I think we were also talking about sometimes they'll slap a thing on, like, ophthalmology approved or something
totally,
like that.
Totally, yeah.
And what is that? Like, oftentimes it's not really what we think it is, right? In that case, can you tell me a bit? I remember we were talking about that before.
Yeah, so sometimes they'll write, like, dermatology tested or ophthalmologist tested. And so when you look into what that actually means, it means that the ophthalmologist tested one parameter of that product on we don't know how many people.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's kind of like going back to, like, my master's, my programming is to always look at, like, who funded the study? You know, how many people are in the study? Like, the validity, the strength, the power of the study. So not being able to know that in that statement makes it hard.
Mm.
So that's why I called the actual ophthalmologist myself.
There you go. That's when you know you got some clout.
I was like,
right?
What did you test?
Like, yeah.
What did you test and how did you test
that's
it?
That's awesome. Okay, so Latisse.
Yes.
Sorry, Latisse, for picking on you specifically, but... like, we sell still in our office Latisse. If patients come in and they ask for it, it's just sort of in the back.
Uh-huh.
But I've been hearing a lot and talking to a lot of colleagues about why we should not be using these serums on our eyelashes and our eyelids. Can you tell us a little bit about what serums are out there and why they're not so good?
Yeah, so the prostaglandin analogs ones, like Latisse and the like, can have secondary effects on the eyes, which we all know about, right? So the darkening of the skin, the changing the color of the iris, blah, 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 blah,
right.
And irritation on the ocular surface. So ideally, those ones, yes, they have an amazing effect, right? The lashes will grow and the patients will be happy, but on the long run, it could affect the ocular surface. So the truth is, like I've been saying, instead, we kind of try and find solutions that are a bit more, let's say, I don't like to use the word natural after this whole thing, but, you know, that are softer, gentler on the eye, that'll actually go and work for the body to generate its own healthier lashes. So the alternative is castor oil. It's not going to work like Latisse. You know, it's not going to make your lashes kind of, like, grow and be, you know, long and luscious and everything like that. And it's important in the messaging, right? It's important that when we do propose an alternative that we don't kind of, like, oh yeah, this is just as good. This is, like,
right.
You know, the same. if we explain, so this is what I'll say. I'll say, look, Latisse is great and everything like that. I see that you're having a reaction, but that person doesn't want to go to nothing. They want a solution. So castor oil, I'll say, is a good alternative, but it demands effort, right? It's consistency. You got to put this every single night, and you won't even see an effect until 3 months down the line. So, but what it's doing is it's strengthening the root of the lash so that you have thicker, healthier lashes that your own body is creating, right? So that's the alternative, and that's the difference. And I think that by explaining sort of like, this is an alternative, it's not the same. Then they understand, and then they can make their choice based on what they want to go with.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, I think that's a nice thing is also you're not just taking it away completely. You are replacing it with something. You are giving them an alternative.
Yeah.
And also always, as always, setting those expectations in general is very important.
Yeah.
So I think we've covered a lot of bases regarding clean beauty, right? Kind of defined what is clean beauty. We've talked about what are some of the products out there. What is clinically, what are we doing and looking for? What about on the business side of things, right? How can me as an optometrist adopting and understanding clean beauty, how can that help the bottom line?
Yeah, but you will retail it to your patients in your practice. And ultimately, you'll notice that once you present it as an option and the patients want it, then it's just an added revenue stream for your clinic.
Yeah.
So to me, there's kind of no reason not to. It's not like you got to buy in huge quantities. But, you know, you start with kind of the main ones and then see how they go and build. Everything should, you know, start small and manageable and then you kind of go with that. But we've noticed that in a lot of practices, it's been a really well received and patients are really happy to have that option there. Because instead of going to Sephora and kind of sifting through themselves, they get to get it from their eye doctor. Kind of like when you go to your dermatologist for something and they're like, this is the cream that would be best for your skin.
Right.
You walk out with the cream because that's sort of you trust your dermatologist.
Right. So what types of products would you say, would you recommend? If I'm starting small, should I start with like a sunscreen? Should I start with makeup, or should I start with cleansing products? Where is a good place to start?
I think like the number one kind of seller that everyone wants to know and go to is mascara. So that's an easy one to sell. Eyeshadow sticks are also a good one.
Okay.
But you know, there's like 12 colors. You pick like the first two or three best sellers, you know?
Okay.
And just something manageable, but to so that it's there, that it has a presence in your clinic and that your whole staff is on board. Sort of everyone is interested and excited and motivated by it. And that's why it's cool to have, you know, one, let's say, go-to person who really loves it. And then that person will be able to kind of learn and pick up from there.
Makes sense. Definitely makes sense to have that, especially for me. Now, you might be the doctor who's really into it and you want to do it. That's great.
Uh-huh.
But for me, it's more likely that I just need to have one of my staff who's really into it. And, we have staff who have previously worked at Mac or Sephora or wherever, so they're into it. So maybe I'll just have to kind of get them upskilled a little bit and they can take care of that. Cool. Any other final words you want to share on clean beauty and why we should be kind of thinking about this differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day that it's our role as optometrists to kind of broach the topic and be knowledgeable on everything that goes on and around the eyes. And this is kind of going to always evolve, right? As we learn more, as we research more, and as more and more studies come out, then we're going to learn more and be able to kind of adapt. But at the moment, I think we're in a good position to be the people who know what's going on for our patients, because if it's not us, it's going to be either TikTok, it's going to be the nail tech, the lash tech, or somebody else kind of giving this information, when in reality, it should come from their eye doctor.
100%. Actually, that's such a great message to kind of end this on. And in a couple of different, sorry, if I can take it in a couple of different directions. One, as the industry and a profession evolves, I think we need to start to own these things. Anything around the eyes, we need to own it. Now, it doesn't mean that every single one of us is going to be able to own it and really rock it. But if it's something that you're into, you know, this is a way, another way to distinguish yourself, differentiate yourself and your practice from sort of the more, you know, the big box and the bigger brands out there that won't be paying as much attention to these things. That's another way for us to differentiate. And two, you know, we have amazing colleagues who specialize in these areas. We should be doing these interprofessional referrals, right? You know, sending patients that maybe I'm not comfortable seeing or you know, I'm not as well versed in, sending them to Claudine or sending them to somebody else who's maybe more of an expert in a certain area. I think getting comfortable referring to each other versus
100%.
To outside of our profession, I think that's really important too. So let's talk to each other. Let's see who's, you know, specializing in different things and share our patients.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to give our patients the best experience. It's a win-win. you know, it makes us look good, the patients feel good, you know, it's the right way to do it. So,
yeah.
Claudine, where can people find you and, you know, follow you and learn more about you?
About me?
Yeah, you.
Me? Oh. I, on
TikTok.
Yeah, I guess. But that's only if you want to see the side of me that's like ridiculous.
It's so good. It's not ridiculous.
Eyedrop Shop is more curated, like on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like the more professional. Then like TikTok is where like I lip sync to Cruella DeVille and like Ursula.
That's awesome.
And then obviously like our website, info@eyedropshop.ca or .com. And then you kind of just message you want, you know, to reach me and they forward it to me.
Okay.
And other than that, yeah, it's good. My pleasure. I love it. This is my favorite thing. And optometrists across Canada know, like anything that has to do with ODs, I speak to personally,
yeah,
because I just find that it's so fun to connect with ODs across Canada and the US. So yeah, I love doing it. So yeah.
And you're amazing at it, honestly.
Oh,
it's always so much fun to talk to you and have you on the podcast. And
thank you.
Really, it's been amazing to see everything that you're doing and the growth, whether it's social media or business wise.
Thank you.
Or hang on. As an author. Okay, so signing off.
So a nice.
Of ways. Number one, check out Emma Goes to the Eye Doctor, available on Amazon. And make sure you get in touch with Claudine and follow her, you know, for different reasons. One is like, you know, to kind of learn a bit from her, kind of see what she's doing, but to connect with her, maybe have conversations.
Absolutely.
And that kind of thing. I think it's, again, something that we can all do to benefit ourselves. I want to say thank you again to Thea Pharma Canada for supporting this episode. This is episode number 2 of 3 that we're going to do in this series. So make sure you go back and you listen to the first one and stay tuned for the third one that's going to be coming out pretty soon as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the 2020 podcast, Canada's number one optometry podcast. I'll see you in the next episode.